Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm actually recording this show in advance this month. On May 19th, when this airs, I'm going to be in Buffalo, New York, visiting with my mother. Some of you who listen to my show regularly may remember that my February show was canceled because my mom, who's going to be 91 on May 24th, was in the hospital in February. And I'm happy to say she's doing much better, some of it thanks to homeopathy, actually. And I'm going to be visiting her for her birthday, her 91st birthday. So I'm pre-recording this month from Portola Valley. And just a reminder, too, that this show airs the third Friday of every month. And it focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. Well, it's May. It's beautiful here in California. Finally, the rains have stopped, and everything is blooming like crazy. In fact, everybody's having trouble with allergies, and that's a good reason for all of you out there who are suffering that way to give homeopathy a try, because homeopathy really does have a good track record in treating allergies. I myself know this because I used to suffer from summer allergy, hay fever kind of allergies. I used to have to take antihistamine every day in my years before homeopathy, and really it got worse, was getting worse and worse every summer. And finally, actually, after I had my very first homeopathic remedy from prescribed by a homeopath, my summer allergies left me, completely left me. So that was a real blessing. I must say I'm still allergic to cats, in particular my mom's cat when I go visit her. But my summer allergies are gone. So for those of you who are suffering out there, consider starting to see a homeopath for those allergies. You'll never know. You might get some great results. Also, I wanted to apologize. I got one complaint about last month's show, the April show. As you know, if you listen to that show, I'm focusing right now on clinical studies, scientific studies that prove the effectiveness of homeopathy. And the complaint was a few things, but I think the primary problem was that I was focusing quite a lot on studies that prove that homeopathy is not the placebo effect. And I know that scientific studies aren't everybody's cup of tea, but let me just tell you why I am spending a few shows on this subject. First of all, many people are very skeptical about homeopathy, and they won't give it a try unless they have some kind of proof, scientific proof, that homeopathy works. And it is my mission to convince people to try homeopathy, especially for their for autistic children. And if some scientific studies help convince people, well, I think that's really important. Also, it's true that over the years, really since the beginning of homeopathy 200 years ago, people have been very skeptical about homeopathy because of the use of the ultra dilute doses in this kind of medicine. And in particular, if you talk to a conventional doctor, your average conventional doctor, they'll say two things about homeopathy. First of all, they'll say, there's no studies that prove it works. Well, that's also why I'm doing these particular shows, because there are plenty of studies that show it works, and more are being done every day, especially in Europe. And the second thing they'll say is, well, if it has any effect at all, it's the placebo effect. In other words, that it's working by the power of suggestion. And that is why I spent almost all of the show last time in April focusing on various studies that prove that homeopathy is not the placebo effect. So this is actually something that's thrown at homeopaths and homeopathy all the time. Maybe we're overly defensive about it, but especially because a concocted study was published in The Lancet last year that tried to show this, even though The Lancet had published previous studies that showed that homeopathy was not the placebo effect. Nevertheless, I did focus on this new study and to discuss why it was invalid, why it was concocted, and how it's been debunked. Anyway, enough of that. This show I am going to focus only on actual medical studies that test the clinical effectiveness of homeopathy. And if I get time, we'll move on to the next subject, which is more physics kinds of studies, biophysics studies that show, that indicate how these very ultra-dilute preparations can possibly be working. So we'll see how far I get. The final installment of this three-pronged discussion of how homeopathy works, if it works, how it works, is how homeopaths themselves view how the remedies work, what their models for the action of the remedies are. So that this last piece of this, I hope I will cover in June. And it's less science, less clinical experiments, and more just theories about how homeopaths view how their remedies are working. So even for the non-scientific, those of you, I think that will be a very interesting discussion. Now, if you're totally uninterested in these medical studies, I do suggest you go back and listen to the archives of my show. So you can find all the archives, I've updated it recently, of my show at the ImpossibleCure.com website. So this is the website for my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. This show is based on my book, which is now one of the primary patient education books in the country that homeopaths use. And the book website is www.impossiblecure.com. And if you go to that page, you'll find lots of stuff, how to order the book. There's a section on cure stories. And on the main page there, on the right-hand side, you'll see it says something like Archives of Amy's Show. So you click on that, and then you'll get an archive of all the past shows starting last January. And if you're interested in hearing cure stories, first-hand experience, you might check out the last February show where I talk about my son's cure, interviews with a couple homeopaths. That was May 2005, October 2005, and a wonderful interview in March 2006 with Erica McPhee, who's another autism mom whose son was cured with homeopathy. Also, there's the FAQ show in January 2006. So anyway, let's move on to today's show. As I said, I am going to start off with some medical studies. I also want to say that the chapter of my book that focuses on all these scientific studies is Chapter 7. But before I go into a couple studies that are in Chapter 7, I'm going to outline actually three studies that were discussed at the National Center for Homeopathy workshop in April. There was a workshop on scientific studies, and I'm going to focus on three of those. And before I even start that, let me talk a little bit about placebo-controlled studies. And I did mention this last time. A placebo-controlled study means that one control group, a control group that doesn't take the remedy, is given placebo. So what you'd like to see is that the homeopathically treated group improves more than the placebo-controlled group. But the question is a placebo-controlled study, a conventionally done medical study, really a good test of homeopathic treatment? And there's many reasons why it's not, and why, in particular, the way those studies are designed puts homeopathy at a disadvantage. The first reason is that if you follow my show, you'll know that in homeopathic treatment, treatment is individualized to the patient and requires an interview, an in-depth interview of the patient to find out all their mental, physical, and emotional symptoms. So in a randomized placebo-controlled trial, since you don't want the control group to know that if they're receiving homeopathy or placebo, they have to be interviewed as well. And so So both, everybody's given this interview, and it's well known that an interview of this kind has a beneficial effect. So the placebo controlled group, the placebo group is also receiving this interview, which gives them kind of a leg up. But the most important reason why this kind of study is difficult to apply to homeopathy is that success of homeopathic treatment depends on the correct selection of a remedy. In other words, which remedy will help a person is very much specific to them. It doesn't matter what their disease is. Treatment has to be individualized, and that's very hard to do in a medical trial. And in particular, this is reflected in the results of the trials that have been done. The trials that have been applied to conditions that tend to be very uniform types of conditions where the patients tend to have all the same kind of symptoms, where very few homeopathic remedies are typically used for those kinds of conditions, where the conditions are easily, the results are easily measured and less idiosyncratic to the patient. Those kinds of studies have better results for homeopathy because the individualized treatment matters less. So, for example, in acute diseases, and I'll be giving examples of those, in diseases where you do studies that are for acute diseases, let's say diarrhea or the flu, those kind of diseases, homeopathic trials do better because treatment is less idiosyncratic. It's also interesting to note that in all these studies, when there's longer-term follow-up, homeopathic trials, the homeopathy does better because you can see the longer-term effects, positive effects of the remedy. Nevertheless, these kinds of studies are being done, but some of the leading researchers in homeopathy are trying to develop new kinds of trial models as well for homeopathy. One of the leaders in this area is Iris Bell, who talked at the National Center for Homeopathy conference. In particular, she's pioneering case study based methods that are appropriate for homeopathy as well as for other alternative therapies that tend to be more individualized. So let's move on to a few trials. The first one I want to talk about is on a test of treating arsenic toxicity in Bengal in India. And this is an interesting one because it really deals with the issue of detox, which is something that all of us autism parents are concerned about, detoxing. And in this case, I guess there's a lot of arsenic in the water supply in places in India, and people suffer from arsenic poisoning. And this was an experiment to try using homeopathic remedies to detox people with arsenic toxicity. And actually, this got quite a lot of press. I heard about it because it's very significant. I mean, this is kind of a hard thing to do. And actually, in my book, I actually have a couple stories of detoxification, and one in particular with arsenic. In my book, the story of an orchardist, they used to use arsenic for spraying apples, who was dying from arsenic poisoning and was cured using homeopathic treatment. And in this case, you use what's called isopathic or actually tautopathic treatment, where if you know what the offending substance is causing the disease, you give that substance in potency, in this highly dilute, potentized form. So, in this study, which was published in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine in October 2005, there were two test groups. One group was comprised of 55 people, and they were in the double-blind placebo-controlled group. So there was 33 that received homeopathic remedy, 22 in the placebo group. So in this group, first group, they were given arsenicum album, the arsenic in the 30C dose, or they were given placebo twice daily for 10 days. And what was the result? Well, first of all, the group that was given the homeopathic remedy experienced higher excretion of arsenic in their urine for the first 11 days than those that were given placebo, and which was statistically significant on particular days, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 8, especially on day 8. There was actually a second group that refused to enter a placebo-controlled trial because they didn't want placebo. They wanted the remedy. And so in this group, everybody was given a homeopathic remedy. And this group experienced really striking high excretion rates in their urine. And afterwards, the measure of arsenic in their urine steadily declined to reach the lower limit of the normal range by the 45th day. So they were detoxified as measured by their urine, the arsenic in their urine. So within a month or two, they were detoxified. So this is very significant, an important thing to note. And I know of many autism cases where the children have been detoxed using, for example, the vaccines. The vaccines that are most suspect, they use those in potency, in potentized form, or mercury or thimerosal in potency. And this is an important tool in the treatment of homeopathic treatment of autism, but not the only tool, I got to say. Okay. Here's another study. This one was published in Chest magazine in March 2005, and it was on the use of homeopathy for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is a general term for respiratory ailments, and it is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S., it says here. So this includes things like chronic bronchitis and emphysema that are in this diagnosis. Now, interestingly, this is the kind of ailment that usually be treated in a very individualized form, but in this study, they only used a single remedy to treat everybody. Nevertheless, they did get some good results. So 50 patients with these kinds of problems were given either placebo or the remedy Bichromicum in 30C. The 30C globules, so these were remedies way beyond Avogadro's number, definitely not a molecule of the substance in them. And they were given this remedy, Calibichromium 30C, twice daily doesn't say for how long. Anyway, it was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. After day 2, the tracheal secretions were significantly decreased in the homeopathic group. And the extubation, I guess they were intubated, you know, with a breathing tube. It could be performed earlier. And the length of stay at the ICU was significantly shorter in group 1. In particular, the group that was treated homeopathically stayed in the hospital 4.2 days on average. And the placebo group was in the hospital 7.6 days. So almost twice as long. Another interesting result of the study is that after all the patients ultimately were extubated, but nobody in the homeopathic group had to be reintubated, and none of them needed non-invasive ventilation. So they did much better in the long run. In the placebo group, 4 patients had to be reintubated. Also, in the homeopathic group, the secretions remained stable and didn't increase. And also, the blood gas analysis remained stable. So this was a significant result, and the results were, if you know about p-values, were less than 0.0001, which is a very good result. Trial I want to talk about from the workshop is about the use of arnica. Actually, this is interesting because some of the trials of arnica that have failed have been because arnica has been just misapplied. I know there was a trial of arnica for carpal tunnel syndrome, and this is probably not a good prescription for carpal tunnel syndrome. I don't know how they came up with that as a prescription, and that was not a successful trial. However, the trial I'm going to tell you about is a very appropriate use of the remedy arnica, and it's for facelifts. I remember, plastic surgery type of things. In this case, it was facelifts. And this is interesting. A long time ago, when I first got into homeopathy, I was at my mother-in-law's, and I was talking to a very prominent plastic surgeon from Manhattan, who told me that he, kind of confidentially, that he used arnica, homeopathic doses of arnica for his patients, and sort of wasn't telling people about this, his fellow doctors, but it was very successful. Well, this study study tested this in an experiment. So this once again was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study that used the remedy arnica, which is a well-known remedy, which I actually discuss quite a lot in my book, for trauma, for physical trauma and bruising. And a particular protocol was used. Arnica 1M was first used. It was given in three doses. 1M is a very high dose of arnica. It's arnica diluted 1 to 100, 1,000 times. So that's the same as 100 to the 1,000th or 10 to the 2,000th. Way beyond Avogadro's number. So it was given in three doses, preoperatively, postoperatively, and at bedtime on the day of the surgery. And after that, arnica 12C was given three times a day for 3 days after the surgery. So this was done. This was conducted by the head of the facial plastic surgery department at UC San Francisco. And interestingly, a novel computerized model for objective analysis of skin color was used. So instead of the plastic surgeon evaluating the bruising, the computer was used to evaluate it. So what are the results? The patients who received arnica experienced decreased bruising as measured by the computer on days 1, 5, 7, and 10 with high significance. The placebo group had between 11 and 41% more bruising than those who took the homeopathic remedy, and it took the placebo group 50% longer to reduce this level of bruising to the level of bruising that the homeopathic group had. So this was published in the Archives of Facial Plastic Surgery in January 2006. So a great result. Use your arnica, guys. Those of you who use it know that it can work miracles. Okay, so now I want to move to a couple of studies from my book. The first one is probably one of the more well-known studies that was done already 12 years ago by Jennifer Jacobs. This is an American doctor from the Seattle area who is one of our leading researchers of homeopathic medicine. And in this case, this study actually has been replicated. It was done first in Nicaragua, and then she actually replicated it in Nepal a few years later. So I'm going to tell you about the Nicaragua trial, and this was a trial of homeopathy used for childhood diarrhea. And this was an important trial because this kind of severe diarrhea in childhood is like maybe one is the leading cause of pediatric death, especially in the third world. So there's an estimated 1.3 billion cases and 5 million deaths a year among children under age 5. And in these countries, really the only thing parents can do is rehydrate the kids, but not much more. So the kids who die are dying from dehydration, from the diarrhea. So this trial took place in Nicaragua. 81 children were in the trial. They were age matched, matched according to the severity of their condition. So there were 40 in the treatment group and 41 in the placebo control group. The children were admitted to the study only if they had three or more unformed stools in the previous 24 hours. All of them were given oral rehydration therapy. So all of them were allowed to have water, that kind of therapy during the trial. So the children were weighed, and all of them underwent a complete homeopathic interview and were assigned a diarrhea severity index score that measured various aspects of their case, like vomiting, abdominal pain, temperature, the number of unformed stools in the past 24 hours, the level of dehydration, etc. And these symptoms were characterized according to certain symptom specifications that were predetermined. And in fact, interestingly, a computer program was used to select the homeopathic remedy. The treating homeopath then prescribed a remedy, the remedy that was recommended by the computer, and identical remedy pellets were given, either the remedy or placebo pellets, that were placed in this randomized vials by the pharmacy in the United States. So the homeopath didn't know what they were giving. All they knew is that they just had these vials and they gave the kids what they gave them, what the computer had said, but they didn't know if the medicine was the homeopathic remedy or placebo. Then the parents were instructed to give their child one pellet of the medicine after every unformed stool and to write down what they'd done on a treatment card. And then home visits were made for the next 5 days by the community health workers. The children were examined and then were also weighed each time, weighed after the treatment. So this was a fairly, nicely done study. And what happened? Now, this is interesting. Okay, this is an acute disease, so there's much fewer remedies to consider in this kind of situation, and it's very easy to predict the course of the disease. Usually, the duration of this kind of condition is only 5 or 6 days to begin with, so you can really see over the course of those 5 days where these children were visited, what was the result, what were the effects. So, okay, although the control and treatment groups there was no significant differences between them in age, height, weight, or severity of their disease, the homeopathic treatment did make a significant difference in the outcome. And there were three important aspects of the disease that were reduced by 1 day. So 1 day fewer amounts of disease, and this is in a typically five-day disease. So this is significant. If you can improve the course of a disease by 1 day when so many children are dying from it, you really have the possibility of saving lives. So the number of days until there were less than three unformed stools on two consecutive days, so the number of days until the stool started reforming was decreased by 1 day. The number of days until there was 50% improvement was decreased by 1 day. And the number of days until the first formed stool appeared was decreased by 1 day. So this is actually highly significant and could have a real effect. Interestingly, they also measured what the difference in the results were for children who had measurable amounts of bacteria and viruses in their stool versus those who didn't. So, and it turned out that the homeopathic treatment had the most dramatic effects on the children who tested positive for bacteria and viruses in their stool. So I'm sure many skeptics would just not believe this, that homeopathy could have a measurable impact on diseases with bacteria and viruses. But here's a case where this was proved true, and in fact, Dr. Jacobs went on to successfully replicate this study in a second trial in Nepal in 2000. So, and by the way, this trial I told you about was, it appeared in the journal Pediatrics in 1994. So, one more trial I'm going to tell you about. And this one is also a great one for the skeptics because it's about animals. I really defy a skeptic to explain how a bunch of pigs on a farm are getting well because of the placebo effect. So this test was done in Germany 1999, and it was a test of the use of homeopathic remedies on livestock farms. Now, many of us know what a problem the use of antibiotics is in our animal population, and these antibiotics make their way into our food and cause problems for all of us, and including resistance to antibiotics, because so much is given to the animals. In particular, often what's done is, instead of like huge high therapeutic doses of antibiotics, low levels of antibiotics are put into the feed just constantly to prevent rampant disease in these livestock farms. So in this study, there were four randomly assigned groups of pigs. So in one study, in one group, a combo remedy actually was used. This was done in Europe, where combos actually are used more often. A combination of five different remedies in various potencies were given to one group of the pigs. Another group was given nothing, I guess placebo. Another group was given the standard amount of antibiotics that are given to the pigs in this kind of lower dose. And the final one was given the antibiotics, but in a very high dose, sort of a therapeutic dose. So there were 1,444 pigs, 440 pigs in the study, and the primary outcome that was measured was the incidence of respiratory disease, which is what is common, I guess, for pigs and normally affects 24 to 69% of pigs on farms. So it's a real problem. The results of the study I find just startling and wonderful, actually. So the homeopathic treatment was far superior to the prophylactic doses of antibiotics, the normal amount of antibiotics that are given to pigs, in preventing respiratory disease by a significant amount. So the normal prophylactic doses of antibiotics made it only 11% less likely that the pigs would become sick. But the homeopathic remedies made it 40% less likely that the pigs would become sick. Then placebo, by the way. And the allopathic drugs that were given at therapeutic high levels, which you can never dose animals at those levels all the time, it made it 70% less likely that the pigs would become sick. So 11% less for standard levels of antibiotics, 40% for homeopathic remedies, 70% for therapeutic doses of antibiotics. So this is so significant, because if farms could use homeopathic remedies instead of antibiotics, it would just clean up our food supply, and it's even more effective. And, you know, I've recently heard that some of the organic dairies that Horizon Farms, it says right on their milk carton that they use homeopathic remedies. They don't use antibiotics for their organic cows. They use homeopathy, yes. So, okay, well, let's see. It's almost time for me to finish. But I'm going to talk just a little bit more about what I'll get into, and I'll get more into it next month. But so now we know homeopathic remedies work. I mean, studies prove that they do work. They're effective. They're more effective than placebo, and often more effective than conventional medicine. But how do they work? How can these extremely dilute preparations, where not even a molecule of the original substance is in them, how can this be working? And the truth is that we don't really know yet. But science is starting to get there. And more studies are done in various areas, actually having nothing to do with homeopathy, but in areas of ultra-dilution physics, for example, or in chaos and complexity theory, that are beginning to get us clues how these things work. So the key part of all this is the following, is that, first of all, we have to prove that there is something, some kind of signature, some kind of proof that the ultra dilutions are not the same as plain water. And there are studies that are beginning to demonstrate this is the case. There is measurable differences between just plain water and a dilution that was made from a homeopathic remedy using the process of dilution and succussion, which is this shaking process. So that's the first thing I'm going to talk about. There's proof of this. And in fact, last time I even talked about that a new paper came out just at the end of last year by two very prominent material scientists, Rustam Roy and William Tiller, that states that perhaps chemists don't believe this, but from the point of view of material science, the study of materials, this is not surprising at all that these homeopathic dilutions are different than plain water. Okay, so once we believe that there's something there, something measurable difference between these preparations and water, then it starts to become a little easier to understand how this works. Somehow the remedy, these dilutions carry some kind of energetic signature that's in the water. And in fact, somehow this is able to be transmitted to the little white pills that you take when you take a remedy. And that's how they're prepared. The little white sugar pills are coated with this preparation, this water, this dilution. And once it enters your body, once you put that pill in your body or take a sip of a liquid remedy into your body is 70 to 80% water. And especially if the signature is energetic, is not just chemical. It's not chemical. Homeopathic remedies don't operate chemically, like with molecules moving around. They're working on a different level energetically, and that energy can travel very rapidly through your body because your body is mostly water. So the moral here is that the message that's been given to your body is energetic, and the medium for the transmission in through your body is water, and that's the message that's really important to take in for many reasons. When I talk about how homeopaths view how the remedies work, that's an important thing to remember. And then the second question is, okay, I can believe it. There's something in this, and I can see how it goes into my body and spreads very rapidly through my body. But why the law of similars? Why is that the method that works for homeopathy? Why does a substance that causes symptoms also cure them? And we'll get into that as well, both from a scientific point of view and from sort of a model point of view, what homeopaths think. So that's where I'm going to end up today. I'm going to start next time with just a couple of very interesting, but one particularly interesting piece of work that shows that something is in these homeopathic preparations. Definitely something's going on there. And then we'll talk about why the law of similars may be, why that works. I also wanted to say one more thing about that and I'll touch on this next time, but these studies that have been done with these ultra dilutions have shown that if you take a substance and you create an ultra dilution from it, even if it's an allopathic drug, so you have like a little bit of this allopathic drug and you create an ultra dilution from it, these studies have shown that ultra dilution will have the same effects on people as the original substance. And what does that mean? Well, that means that you could take, one pill of some very expensive drug and create millions and billions of doses from it. That means essentially free drugs. And what do you think the pharmaceutical companies would think about that? That would be, given that, you can understand why there's a lot of effort made to discredit homeopathy, because the financial consequences for the pharmaceutical companies is staggering. So on that, I'm going to conclude today, and I'll just quickly wrap up by reminding you to visit the ImpossibleCure.com website. Find out how you can order my book, Impossible Cure, which does have a whole chapter on all this kind of scientific stuff, but is mostly about the experience and the philosophy and history of homeopathy, and has tons of cure stories in it that keeps it interesting for you. Another great resource is the Homeopathy for Special Needs website and Yahoo group, which you can find out more about at homeopathysnc.org. And a final reminder to those of you out there to join the National Center for Homeopathy, nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org, and get their magazine, Homeopathy Today, when you join, and lots of other great member benefits that you get for supporting a very important organization. So until June, I just want you to be well, try some homeopathy for those summer allergies, and remember, there's truly hope with homeopathy.